Please join me in welcoming, if you would, Mickey Kantor.
Thank you, Bob, very much. Truth be told, I was in Los Angeles. Now, I don't know what that means coming to Tucson, but we'll figure it out later. Thank you, Bob, for having me here today. I appreciate it very, very much. You know, Bob, Larry Schaefer have had a lot of these conferences, and one that I don't know if all of you were invited to, they had on a island in the Caribbean, and two of your participants decided to go out and take a small boat that was a small island over the horizon and go to it, and they did. They got there, and their boat had run out of gas. They had no food. They had no water, and they felt they were in some trouble. Had no cell phone. If they had one, it wouldn't have worked. And so one gentleman lay down in the sand and went to sleep. Other gentlemen, understanding the problem, began to wave at every passing boat, every airplane, writing messages in the sand. Nothing was working. Finally, he woke up the gentleman who was asleep and said, "Don't you understand what trouble we're in?" And the guy says, "Yeah, I understand." He says, "Why aren't you helping me do something?" And the guy looks at him and says, "Well, let me tell you. 3 years ago, I gave RFA $5,000. Last year, it was 10. This year, I've told Bob Dineen it was going to be 50. Believe me, he'll find me." By the way, if your dues are backdated on your dues, please give me the checks. I'll take them for you. Don't worry about it. This morning's papers are interesting. And they tell us a lot about what you are doing and leading in and how important it is. The New York Times, which many of us read every morning all over the nation, has an editorial about Eliot Spitzer asking him to do what the state of California has already done. And that is reduce carbon-based emissions by a substantial amount by the year 2020 and 2030. And on the business page, there is a story which is near and dear to my heart called Guilt-Free Emission Credits, where individuals are going out and paying for their carbon use by giving money to organizations who do something about reducing carbon emissions in the world. It's near and dear to my heart because my wife has announced to me we're going to start doing that. So I need your checks as soon as possible. Third, you'll look at the front page of the Wall Street Journal, and it's astonishing on one level, but it shouldn't be on the other. Iran, front page, can't export as much oil as they have or want to because their domestic needs are growing and growing very fast. Well, why do I cite especially the third? You know the first two. You know what is happening in our country, and even in the developed countries of the world, and beginning in the developing, there is this understanding, both in terms of our health and in terms of global warming and in terms of our security and in terms of our economies, we are in trouble. We've got to do something about it. The President of the United States, George Bush, has said we're addicted to oil, and he is correct. You don't see me saying that much about George Bush, but the fact is he is correct, and I welcome his stance, and I enjoyed the talk as I was in here earlier when the Assistant Secretary of Energy spoke. We are all in this together. This is not about Republicans or Democrats. It's not about liberals or conservatives or people who live in the Midwest, the Southeast, or the West, or in or out of this great country. This is about all of us. It's about our children and our grandchildren. By the way, I have three of those. It's the only reason to have children. Some of you understand that. Now, let me say something about them. They are the brightest, the best looking, the most athletic, the most wonderful, most loving children in the world. Some of you have some in second place. And so if you get nothing out of this speech this morning, I hope you get that out of it. What I want to do is tell you about how I see not only the trade value of what you're doing, which is enormous, not only enormous in the ethanol you can send to other countries when they begin to change their policies, which they are. By the way, the Chinese leadership talks about this constantly. We don't get much news about that in the United States. Now, what are they doing? Strangely and embarrassingly enough, they're doing, in some cases, more than we're doing. Their environmental regulations with regard to automobile emissions are more stringent than those in the United States of America. So, as the Secretary talks about, which he's right to do, they built 7.5 million cars last year, growing at 25% a year. We're at 17 million. They will catch us at some point. The good news is they understand the damage that they are doing and that we are doing and our friends in Europe and all over the world are doing, and we have got to begin to act in a serious and a coordinated fashion to address this issue, which you are leading the charge. There are so many huge issues we face as a nation and as a people. If you look at the issues we face, it is almost unbelievable what is going to have to be done by this president in his last 23 months and by the next president of the United States. By the way, if you want to have the next world conference in Des Moines, I suggest there are 16 Americans all running for president who will agree with you, at least up until late January of next year. First of all, we have economic challenges in our world. We have the foreign policy impacts of use of oil and gas. We have increasing concerns in our nation. What do we do about Medicare and Medicaid and health care costs? What do we do about many other issues that we face that are major issues of our time, terrorism, interdependence, globalization? There is no bigger issue than what you work on every day. I don't say that just to flatter you or to make you think that somehow you are the most vital industry in the world. You are important. There are others just as important as you, but we have got to change our policies and make some sense here. And it doesn't matter whether we start at the state level, as California has done under a Republican governor, or as New York is about to do on a Democratic governor, or as hopefully this administration will begin in the next 23 months, or working with the most environmentally conscious and alternative fuel supportive Congress in the history of the United States. We have got to make it happen for everyone, not just for you, not just for Bob Dineen, not just for the association, not just for your growing industry, not for the health of your shares, but for everyone, because if we don't, we're going to find ourselves in an impossible situation in just 20 or 25 years. This year, in the world, we use 84 million barrels of oil. That will double by the year 2025, which will be about 163 million. It's really 98%. I hope you won't mind my taking some literary license here. That 163 million barrels of oil that we're using is probably too low. If we don't begin now to implement policies that will cut into that energy use, it won't be 163 million, it'll be much more. Every time we try to estimate in the future either economic growth or the use of certain resources or how many containers are coming into the port of Long Beach and L.A. from Asia on a yearly basis, we sadly underestimate each time. And so this is not just an important issue. This is a crisis. And what you're doing is making a difference, but you have to make much more a difference, but you have to do it with policies that allow you to do so. Clearly, we understand the impact of China and India, and others. And it won't just be China and India in 20 years. The world is growing at an ever-increasing rate. We are literally a multipolar world economically. These countries, the developing countries, are growing at very fast rates, 5, 6, 7, 8, China at 10%. As you grow that fast, as your income increases, as you buy more cars, as you require more buildings to be built, conservation, new automobile engines, alternative fuels become critical if we're going to address this issue. So what you are doing in your industry not only is creating a fuel and creating energy that is less polluting and less expensive in most cases, but is replacing oil and gas, which are choking us to death, both economically, politically, and in terms of our foreign policy and in terms of our environment. But what you are doing is also creating the technology that can be exported as well. And that technology is incredibly valuable. And so are your sister and brother industries in terms of wind power and solar power and in biodiesel and other areas as well. Putting all that together, we have a challenge. And the challenge is political on one hand, but it's taking advantage of a movement around this country on the other. People have awakened to this issue. They've awakened not only in the Midwest, but all over the country. They've awakened in our cities and suburbs, in our rural areas as well. We can take advantage of that. We can take advantage of it at the state level, and we can take advantage at the federal level as well. The Congress of the United States is prepared, ready, willing, supportive to work with you, as we just heard the administration is as well. Let's not wait for the next president of the United States. We'll have one in 2009. I don't know who it will be, but whoever it will be better be supportive of these issues and this policy, or they won't be president of the United States. I believe it's one of the serious issues that is faced, and I believe you're going to have support on both sides. And I would urge Bob Dineen, sitting right there in your association, to make sure in the debates preceding Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada and South Carolina, and then February 5th, where we're having something like 160 primaries or something on one day. I don't know how many it is, but it's a lot. That you make sure, and your association makes sure, and all of you make sure, this is central to the debate. Because if you do, no president can be elected in 2008 and take office in 2009 in January and not be absolutely committed to working with you to continue to grow these policies and to grow your industry and to make sure we all of us, our children and our grandchildren and, God willing, our great-grandchildren, don't have to face this problem when it becomes so difficult it is not able to be solved. As I said, no one alternative is good enough. And it's not just ethanol. It's not just biodiesel. It's not just wind power or solar power. All of those are important and must be promoted and must be supported. But it's also conservation. Japan is 9 times more efficient in conversation than is China, 3 times more efficient than the United States. There is no reason in the world we can't be as efficient in conservation in our buildings, our factories, in our homes as the Japanese. No reason whatsoever. The only reason is our policies don't mandate it, and it's time that they did. There is no reason in the world we can't usher in this new era of automobile engines, whether it be hybrids or plug-in hybrids or fuel cells or LNG trucks. Whatever it is, we're going to have to do everything we can to begin to wean ourselves from what I discussed before, this addiction that we have. And it's not just because the environment or the economics, not just because of our health, it's also because of our foreign policy. There's no one in this room, I think, will disagree with me. It skews our foreign policy that we are so dependent on outside sources for oil and gas. 65% of what we use in this country, about 20 million barrels a day last year, come from outside the United States of America. And let me tell you what exacerbates that. Over 50% of what China uses comes from outside of China. So what does that do? It makes us dependent on unstable regimes. Let's just think about it. I don't know what the good Lord was thinking. I'm so upset with her. Just think about it. Venezuela, Nigeria, Sudan, the Middle East, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Russia. Why was all the oil placed there? Why not in Tennessee? I grew up there. I mean, we weren't that smart. We could have figured it out. People talk about inbreeding. We would have gotten it at some point. But it's not. But so what does that mean to us? Those unstable regimes cause problems. And they're a threat to us and our allies, not just to the developed countries, developing as well. And they skew our politics and our reaction. Let me just take the genocide going on in Darfur. We'd like to stop it. Some would argue we've done enough, or we're not doing enough, we're doing too much. Some would argue the UN ought to put troops in there, and I wish they would. Some would argue the U.S. ought to react. Maybe we can't under our present circumstances. But something should be done. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. But the Chinese have a bigger investment in Sudan than we do. They have more influence. But the Chinese depend upon that oil to some degree for their economy. It's very difficult to get President Hu Jintao to react, to do something, to really stand up and say to the Sudanese, it's time that you allowed these troops in, you stopped the genocide, and you engage in more humanitarian policies. Now, that's not the only thing. We would like to stop proliferation in Iran. Iran is a very dangerous country at this point under the Ahmadinejad regime. No one will argue with that. We would like to get the Chinese to help us there. However, one-third of all the oil imported by China comes from Iran. You think they're going to react to that? You think they're going to try to do something that would put pressure on the Iranian government, which might result in a cutoff of their oil? Of course not. Two situations, clear that something has to be done, dangerous to the world, not only in terms of genocide, which is morally dangerous, proliferation of nuclear weapons, which is physically dangerous to every one of us. Every one of us, not just in the Middle East, around the world. Just wonder what would happen if some terrorist got a hold of a nuclear weapon produced by Iran. But we can't get much done because not only the Chinese but the French and others receive a substantial amount of oil from Iran. And so we're going to have to figure out how we're going to deal with that situation. One way to deal with it is to begin to reduce our dependence on oil from foreign countries, not just in this country, but around the world. If you think we have a problem with addiction to foreign oil, think about the Japanese who have no energy resources at all. And they're caught in the middle of this, and it's very difficult for them. Think about the Chinese. That addiction to foreign oil is just going to grow in China. It's not going to diminish. They're not finding new sources of oil, and they're using too much coal, and they're going to have to cut it out. They are choking themselves to death, and they know it. And so this is only going to become worse unless we do something to make it become better. And that means we're going to have to use every tool at our disposal. Arguments about the environment, arguments about our health, arguments about the economy and how it's affected adversely by our dependence on not only foreign oil, but oil and gas itself. In arguments about the effect on our foreign policy, which is enormous. Now, those unstable regimes that I talked about earlier are also subject to terrorism. Look what's happening in Nigeria today. Look what could happen in Venezuela if there is a, let's say, violent reaction to what Mr. Chavez is trying to do there. The first things to go are going to be their production of oil and gas, and it's going to affect us profoundly. So unless we wean ourselves as quickly as possible, We're going to be vulnerable to these regimes and continually having to support authoritarian and authoritarian governments and dictatorships because it's in our economic interest of the nation. And believe me, as an American, I'm not comfortable with that. I understand the reality. I have been there. I enjoyed the privilege of serving in the Clinton administration. By the way, when I met President Clinton, I was 6 feet four. I won't say that he didn't sleep. I'm sure he did. He must have. But I'm not a witness to it, in the sense that you could get a call at any time. He was on top of every issue. The reason I mention that is that we are going to have to be on top of every issue as a nation. We're going to have to make sure we solve this problem as quickly as we possibly can. It's not just your tax credits and the tariffs on Brazilian ethanol, which should remain, of course. It's fair and it's right. There's no reason that the tax credit should have gone, frankly, to the Brazilian and other foreign industries, except that's the way the court ruled. I think the Congress and the administration did the right thing by then imposing a tariff on Brazilian ethanol. It doesn't keep that ethanol out of the United States. If I had been USTR, I would have supported that strongly, and it must continue. And it's not just the mandate of the use of certain percentage of ethanol or the building of flex fuel vehicles. It's more and more and more of that, as you know. Let me say something that's close to my heart in terms of trade, and that's the trade deficit. And the reason I mention this is that your industry is growing, will have an enormous impact economically on the rest of the world and on the United States of America. It represents now thousands of jobs. It's going to represent tens of thousands in the future. And I hope the United States, we will do something about some R&D credit, R&D subsidies for you to develop your industry even further to create more jobs, but also to create the kind of exports that we can send throughout the world, and we have technology transfer which will build the industries in other nations. I'm not saying that to create more competitors for you, but you will have competitors, but because it's good for our country and good for you. And I hope the next administration will do that as quickly as possible. So as we look at the rising U.S. budget deficit and debt and the rising U.S. trade deficit and fear of agricultural prices, which are going up very quickly, I assume cellulosics will help to stem some of that tide when they come online in an effective way, or the pressure on imports from Brazil. There's much more to be said, as I've tried to outline. Much more to be done. There is nothing for you to fear. You only have great opportunity in the future. But that's dependent upon whether or not we get our policies right. And whether or not you and all your colleagues, not just in the ethanol industry or biodiesel industry, but in all the alternative fuel industries, come together and make sure the policy is correct. I have nothing but praise for what Bob Dineen, Larry Schaefer, and all your staff has done, Bob. You've made a real impact in Washington, and I hope that impact not only continues but is growing. And so what Bob asked me to say is we're going to double your dues this year. Bob only wants a 50% increase in his salary, and now I can get my plane trip paid to go back home. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.